Welcome to the Psalm Companion to 40 Minutes in the Old Testament. 40 Minutes in the Old Testament is a 1517 Podcast Network podcast, as is the Companion. We are in Psalm number 5. This one's to the choir master. It's for the flutes, you know, so you're going to need flutes. If you have, I don't know, if maybe in the editing I can put some flutes in the background. Probably not going to do that, but that's what you need to really get the full effect of this psalm. It is, of course, a psalm of David. What we got? What we got going on in this psalm, Chad?
All the people who love flutes out there, I hate to, you know, disappoint you, but that is a conjecture. It's the only place in the Old Testament where that occurs. So we'll say it's flutes, though.
There you go.
Yeah, maybe it's clarinets. Yeah.
Some kind of wind instrument, you know.
It was a wind instrument. But yeah, let's just leave it at that. Not percussion, but a wind instrument. A flute's that'll work.
Maybe it's for like, you know, like the it's for the Sunday school class with the recorders. That's what this is for.
Yeah. To the choir master for recorders, a psalm of David. So we start out here with a pretty typical beginning to a lot of the psalms, calling upon God to hear the prayer of David in this case, and of course of us as well. So I'll it's 12 verses. Read through it, and then we'll pick out a few highlights. Give ear to my words, O Lord. Consider my groaning. Give attention to the sound of my cry, my King and my God, for to you do I pray. In the morning, O Lord, you hear my voice. In the morning, I prepare a sacrifice for you and watch. For you are not a God who delights in wickedness. Evil may not dwell with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all evildoers. You destroy those who speak lies. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man. But I, through the abundance of your steadfast love, will enter your house. I will bow down toward your holy temple in the fear of you. Lead me, O Lord, in your righteousness because of my enemies. Make your way straight before me. For there is no truth in their mouth. Their inmost self is destruction. Their throat is an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. Make them bear their guilt, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Because of the abundance of their transgressions, cast them out, for they have rebelled against you. But let all who take refuge in you rejoice. Let them ever sing for joy and spread your protection over them, that those who love your name may exult in you. For you bless the righteous, O Lord. You cover him with favor as with a shield. A lot of enemy talk in this psalm. We see that all over the psalms. David is constantly talking about those who seek to destroy him, those who surround him, those who plot against him, those who whisper against him. Over and over, you'll kind of have this enemy imagery that piles up, which I actually appreciate because I think it's one of the, and this is a small soapbox of mine. I'll keep it real brief, but it's one of my maybe complaint is too strong a word, but I'll rephrase it. One of the things I wish we had in more of our contemporary hymns and songs and just the various ways in which we sing to God is more talk of the foes that are out there. And I say that because it's all over the book of Psalms. I mean, you hardly encounter a psalm that doesn't have something about that. And we, of course, no, we don't battle against flesh and blood, but we do battle against all the spiritual forces that are out there, as Paul talks about in Ephesians. So that fits with a lot of the themes we find in the book of Psalms about the fact that we, the moment we get out of bed, we're in a fight. So the military imagery that you find in Psalm 5 and all of the book of Psalms fits with the reality that we still live in. So he starts out here asking God to hear his prayer, give attention, incline his ear to what David has to say. And then verse 3 says, in the morning, O Lord, in the morning, you hear my voice. In the morning, I prepare a sacrifice for you and watch. That's why, so Psalm 4 is an evening psalm, and then Psalm 5 is a morning psalm. Nice pairing, one after the other. The idea of getting up in the morning and, as it says here, prepare a sacrifice, that can be translated different ways. It's kind of the idea of getting everything ready, kind of laying everything out in order is the another way that we could translate this. I order my prayer to thee, which I kind of like. It's you get up in the morning, what are you going to do? Well, a good way to start is to kind of lay out your desires in order before the Lord. So you turn to him, you ask him to be with you, to bless you, to forgive you, to do all these things, because you stand in constant need of his gifts.
I like the way that this psalm is sort of ordered. So first, you have him ask God to give ear. So it's even a good thing to do to ask God to listen to you. Of course, he promises to listen to you, but say, listen to my words, the words I'm about to say. Consider my groaning. So these are not words that you can listen to. This is something for you to consider. So this is just, I consider my distress, right? Consider my anguish, consider my pain, whatever this is. It's not words that we're talking about. So it's listen to what I say and see what is going on with me. The things that I don't have words for. You have to watch to know what about this. Give attention to the sound of my cry, right? So like I'm going through hard things, difficult things, bad things. I've got words to say. I want you to hear those. And I've got a situation going on that I would like you to pay attention to, that I'd like you to consider. And I'm going to start my day off by asking you to do these things. This is how I rise in the morning and say, tune your ear to me and cast your eyes upon me, which is great. And then he does this thing. You might think he's about to do this righteous, unrighteous contrast thing where he says, okay, so listen, I know, here's my words. You're not a God who delights in wickedness. Evil may not dwell with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all evildoers. Strong. You destroy those who speak lies. The Lord abhors the bloodthirsty and deceitful man. And you're like, well, it's a good thing you're not that, David. Obviously, what he's about to do is contrast himself and be like, those people who are bad and me who is good, that's why you should listen to me. But he doesn't, and instead he says, but I, through the abundance of your steadfast love, will enter your house. So David doesn't say, and because I'm not like them, or I'm none of those things, or you couldn't describe me as any of those things, which, by the way, you can describe David as many of those things. That's not what he does. He says, I am not like that. There is a distinction between those people and me, but the distinction has to do with who you are, not with who I am. It has to do with the fact that I am a recipient of the abundance of steadfast love that you have given me. I mean, I love this through right here, but I, through the abundance of your steadfast love, will enter your house. Not any other way.
Yeah, yeah, that's the steadfast love is taking him into the Lord's house, which lines up, of course, with everything that we were talking about in the morning, preparing a sacrifice or laying out my request before you. So he's going to the one place where he knows he is going to be recipient of the very blessings that he's describing here. He's going to enter into the Lord's house. So he's going to the temple, or in David's day, going to the tabernacle. He's going to where God is, and he's doing so to be the recipient through, and also to be the recipient of this chesed, of the steadfast love. And then he bows down towards the Lord's holy temple in fear of you, not in the sense of I'm afraid of you, but in reverence toward him, in worship toward him, which is, of course, what the fear of the Lord is in the Old Testament. And then he transitions to making a petition. He says, lead me. So direct my steps. Lead me, O Lord, in your righteousness because of my enemies. Make your way straight before me. David's starting out his day. He's aware of the fact that there's plenty of adversaries out there. There's plenty of things that can go wrong. There's plenty of threats. And so what does he do? Well, he's going to go into the presence of God. I'm going to enter your house. I'm going to bow down because of your love, because of the righteousness that is yours, because I fear you. That is, I believe in you. I reverence you. And I need you, oh God, to make your way straight before me. I don't need it to be crooked. I don't need it to be kind of, unpredictable. Make it straight so that in my walk, I know that I'm not going to stumble because you've straightened out the way before me. And there's plenty of crooked ways that I can go astray and end up falling flat in my face.
Yeah. Well, I think what's great about this, and by the way, he's going to do the same thing again. Like he's going to go back into describing these other people and then also contrasting it with another type of person, and it's going to be a very similar move that he makes. It's still going to have very little to do with what they do. So, but right here, I like this a lot, Chad, because what he does is first he asks the Lord to lead him in his righteousness, right? So he's not saying, you know, let me continue to be righteous, but he's asking to be led in the righteousness of God. So keep me in your righteousness, keep me on that path. But this, because of my enemies, is interesting, because you're like, well, what does that mean? Like it seems like you could just say, lead me, O Lord, in your righteousness, make your way straight before me. That would seem good. Why do you have because of my enemies inserted in here? And I think what David knows, and what I certainly know is true for me, is that the fact that you have enemies, the fact that they're, whatever that is, people, sin, death, the devil, all of these things, all these kind of things. The greatest temptation for you to stray from the righteous path is your enemies. It's retribution, it's hatred, it's all of these things. Like the actual truth is that I need you to keep me on a straight path. I need you to guide me in your righteousness, because my enemies are the greatest temptation for me to go my own way, to take care of my own problem, right? To say, these people are after me, now I will take matters into my own hands. And this is a good way for me to diverge onto a much more crooked path. And so that rings true to me. That is the temptation always, right? Like, what is the greatest cause of me going in a direction I shouldn't go? Well, it's sinners. It's sin itself. It's the devil. It's the flesh. It's all the enemies that we all have.
Yeah, and humans are by nature imitative. Mm-hmm. I mean, we start doing that from our youngest years. Babies imitate their parents, and we still imitate people today. And so, it kind of sounds strange, but we do the same with our enemies. We can begin to imitate, to parallel in our own lives the very things that are a threat to us. I mean, you see this happen all the time, where someone gets sucked into some evil that before was an enemy, but then it begins to kind of imitate that in his own thoughts, desires, actions, words, and pretty soon he's no longer on this straight way, but instead has fallen into the ditch on one side or the other.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so 9 has 9 and 10 have more of this description you were just talking about, Dan, with regard to the opposite of the righteous way of the Lord. Talks especially about the mouth, which is, of course, a huge theme in the Old and New Testament. No truth in their mouth. Their inmost self is destruction. And I think probably the most arresting image in the entire psalm is this one. Their throat is an open grave.
Yeah.
You can't get much more graphic than that. Their throat is an open grave.
Yeah, doesn't Paul use this language? Like, their throat is an open grave, and then the venom of asps is on their lips. This kind of like the venom of vipers. So that, Paul borrows this language.
Yeah, it's mixing of metaphors, but they both kind of get the same idea across, that what is within? A death. Mm-hmm. So the throat is, you peer down their throat, what do you see? I see death. It's a hole leading into where there's a body down there rotting in the grave. Their throat's an open grave. They flatter with their tongue, which is, that's pretty interesting. We usually would not link flattering with a throat being an open grave. But, you know, flattery, this kind of flattery probably being used here is not just trying to make somebody feel better. This flattering is a way in which lies are often concealed.
Yeah, well,
so flatter to your face, stab you in the back.
Well, when I hear flattery, I don't think flattery is used in a positive way ever.
Not here, for sure.
No. Really, like, oh, you flatter me. Like, there's a negative connotation. Flattery is like a compliment with a bad intention, right? Or like.
Insincere one too.
Yeah, insincerity. It's associated with all those things where it's like, if you see somebody and they're talking to someone else and you're like, man, they are just buttering them up. Look at all, like, they're just pouring the flattery on. You're like, this person's trying to get something from them, or this person is trying to conceal something because they actually hate this person. It's flattery is not the same.
It's always self-serving.
Yeah, it's not the same as me going to you and complimenting you about something I think you've done well or something like that. That's sincere.
So compliments, at least true compliments, are always other directed. You're trying to build somebody else up, but flattery is self-directed. You're trying. Yeah, you might be trying to build somebody else up, but it's for you. Mm-hmm. It's all about you, no matter what flattery might be coming.
And flattery is dangerous too, because we all like to be flattered.
Yeah, it feeds our ego.
Yeah, well, that's why it can be associated with the same thing. Like, their throat is an open grave. They flatter with their tongue. It's like, yeah, this is somebody who is saying something that sounds real nice on their lips, but they have death in mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then verse 10, make them bear their guilt, O God. Let them fall by their own counsels. Now, let them fall by their own counsels. That seems strikingly familiar to something we just talked about in Esther.
Yeah. Huh? Yeah.
Continues that theme that we've talked about. Falling into the pit, which you dug here, fall by your own counsels. Get stabbed by your own sword, all those sorts of things. Because the abundance of their transgressions cast them out, for they rebelled against you. All right. Contrast is set up now with verse 11. But let all who take refuge in you. So the prior description are those who are not taking refuge in the Lord. They're taking refuge in their plots and their plans and their flattery and the abundance of their transgressions, all those sorts of things. But let all who take refuge in you rejoice. No flattering going on here, but rejoicing instead. Let them ever sing for joy and spread your protection over them, that those who love your name may exult in you. For you bless the righteous man, O Lord. You cover him with favor as with a shield. So the whole theme of those last two verses seems to be that of divine protection. So taking refuge in him, you're spreading your protection over them. You're covering them with favor as with a shield. So it's the idea that, listen, there's all kinds of dangers out there. Every day we wake up, we're facing a danger. We know this. I mean, maybe physical danger for some people, but for all of us, spiritual dangers. So what do we need? Well, we need to be covered. We need a shield that's going to be over us, somebody that's going to spread his protection over us in this militarized zone that we live in. Well, the only real protection is in Christ. He's our shield. He's our refuge. He spreads his protection over us, and he's the one who's going to fight off the evil that we're either tempted to or that is out to get us. Either way, the protection finally is in him, and only in him.
Yeah, this is the one who, your only protection is in Christ, because he is the one whose righteousness you wear. So if God is going to bless the righteous, you must be finding refuge in Christ. You must be wearing that righteousness that he imputes to you. This is the great thing about this, is that the contrast here again is not, but for those who have only truth in their mouth and who never flatter with their tongue, those people, God, you will bless. No, it's the contrast is there are people who take refuge, who are recipients of God's steadfast love, who trust. What would it be to trust, or what would it be to take refuge in God? Well, it would be to trust him, right? It would be this is a faith-based thing. So the people of faith, that's the contrast. Those who take refuge, those who don't. Those who believe, those who don't. That's the contrast.
Yeah, that's those who are in Christ and those who refuse to have anything to do with him. So in the big picture of things, if you're in Christ, if you're covered by his righteousness, then it doesn't really matter what happens. You're secure in him. You know, so, you know, say somebody actually does get you. Oh, well, fine. It ultimately doesn't matter, because we're safe in Christ. No condemnation for those who are in Christ Jesus. And ultimately no death for those who are in Christ Jesus.
Right. Yep.
Because even death is forced to serve us, because it's just the portal that we walk through into the life that is to come. So great promises in Psalm 5.
Yeah, great. All right, guys. Well, that's Psalm 5. We'll be back next week with another episode of 40 Minutes and another Psalm. Chad, I'll see you there.
All right. See you then.